baby. Welcome in. It is yet another edition of East Coast Bias right here on the Ringer Gambling Show. And of course, for our friends over at FanDuel TV, we welcome in Joe House, Raheem Palmer, yours truly, JJ John Jastrzemski. There is a lot to dissect. We are super fired up to be here. And House, I told you, buddy, the Miami Heat were not going to go quietly in the NBA Finals. Too much pride, too much heart, too much fire in their bellies. And to me, history, and by history, I mean the last 2 months of the postseason, were the perfect lesson in why the Miami Heat were not going to go quietly. So I know you were a firm believer, Denver much better, and I agree with you on that. But how stunned were you, House, watching that fourth quarter, Denver up 8, and those cockroaches, baby, they're at it again.
JJ, not stunned at all. This is the Miami team. It's hilarious that you used the word history to discuss the last 2 months. I love it so much. Because really, in the history of the NBA, there has not been any team like these Miami Heat. There is no precedent for a team to arrive at the playoffs and, you know, have a bottom five offensive rating and then magically transform itself into a team that is, you know, one of the top two teams in the entire playoffs offensively. There is no precedent for a team that shoots, you know, substandard bottom five from 3-point range and magically everybody all get hot at the same time. It is, to me, a continuation of what we've been calling the Miami voodoo. And I still wish I had an explanation for how or why or whatever magic potion Eric Spoelstra is using to cause defenses that the Miami Heat encounter to lose all focus and sense of regular rotations, regular contesting. Like, I just don't understand how or why it is that the competitors that the Heat have confronted, they lose the idea, the notion of defending the three-pointer. And this Miami, we keep saying it. We've been talking about it all through the playoffs since they survived the game against Chicago. If they shoot 50% from three, they probably are going to win. They're going to be right there till the end. And this is exactly what we got in game two. They shot 50% from three. And they, you know, Jamal Murray front rimmed by the teeniest tiny amount the game tying three, and so we're 1-1. I'm just glad for more basketball, JJ. Like, we've talked it through on after game one. None of us Dream and I certainly did not jump into side or spread in anticipation of game two, because you can't, like, you know, go crazy when Miami is involved. You agree with me? I know you do, Dream.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I haven't played a side in this NBA Finals yet. I mean, when you look at the fact that, you know, when it comes to the Miami Heat, for whatever reason, like you said, they transform from a team who just shoots like 34% from three to every single night, it's like they can shoot 50% from three. So it's tough to really handicap this team. And the one thing I said on Twitter is that my model actually likes the Miami Heat in this series. So, like, when you're looking at games in Denver, I have the Denver Nuggets as 5-point favorites. When you're looking at games on the road in Miami, I have it as a pick 'em. So the market is really high on Denver, and Denver does look like the superior team. However, it's tough to handicap this series. The one thing everybody is talking about is making Jokic a score, but it seems that the Denver Nuggets offense isn't an issue. They had 125 offensive rating. The issue is defense. Like, Denver is losing focus on the defensive end. You saw the start of the game. Miami started off with like an 11-0 run. You have guys like Michael Porter Jr. completely losing focus on defense. So if you're not going to stay with these shooters, I think Miami is absolutely live to win this series. And, you know, some of us in the media who counted out Miami, I think we're going to be eating our words.
I think that's an excellent point. And Raheem, I'm glad that you brought up the element in this series that needs to be dissected a lot more than Jokic, passer, score. Because listen, I know what the numbers are, and you, I'm sure, know it better than anybody. When he scores 40-plus points in this postseason, what it has meant for Denver's chances at winning. That's all well and good. But the reason Denver ended up losing game number two is those lapses you saw defensively. First quarter of the game, Max Strus, who couldn't hit a three in game one, he's banging a gazillion threes. And then in the fourth quarter, you had Duncan Robinson taking over and making some monstrous plays that really got Miami to where they needed to be. And then, of course, they took it from there. And now you wonder about Denver here, Raheem, on the road, because we've talked about this all year on East Coast Bias, that they have been as good a home team as you're going to find in the NBA. On the road, all right, they played really well against the Lakers. Give them credit for that. They won game three on the road. They ended up winning game four. They took care of business. Phoenix series, lost a couple of games on the road. Minnesota, lost a game on the road. The record in the regular season, not great on the road. Like, let me put it this way. We'll get to our game three pick. We'll dissect this game a little bit more in detail coming up in a little bit. I'm going to be stunned. That's right, boys, stunned. And Raheem, starting with you on this. If Miami does not get one of the next two games, Miami is 1,000% get one of the next two games in South Florida. That's my take.
Without a doubt. You know, what does it say about a team? Like, you look at the Miami Heat. They had a 21-12 lead. They gave up a 40-14 run between the first quarter and the second quarter. At one point, it was 50-35, and they still won a game on the road in the finals as an eighth seed. That tells you how tough this team is. And then when you look at the Cody Zeller minutes, I mean, they were basically spotting the Denver Nuggets points. They had Cody Zeller out
there. It felt like, you know what it felt like, Raheem? Chris Dudley against Tim Duncan in the 1999 NBA Finals. For you old school NBA fans, that still gives me nightmares. That's what I felt like I was watching with Jokic and with Chris Dudley or Cody Zeller on the floor. My goodness, I had to jump in there. I'm sorry.
It's like when you saw that, it felt like the series was over. And then Duncan Robinson absolutely dominates. I mean, in the fourth quarter, this team had a 189 offensive rating. So, what do you do? Like, so it's just, you can never count this team out. You can never lapse. I think this series is going back to Denver tied 2-2. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm on the Nuggets -1.5 games for the series spread. I might buy out of it because I think this series might go seven.
Wow, House. Stunning so right there.
The crazy thing is, I honestly don't think that our original assessment or the assessment that we made after game one was wrong. I honestly don't think we talked this through on East Coast Bias, and I think the sentiments that we shared, you'll see it in the deep basketball analytical community. You'll see it in all the hoops heads across the world that Miami drew dead with this Denver team. And the reason that we all shared that view is because we couldn't come up with a solution to the Joker. We couldn't come up with a way for Miami to stop the Joker. Well, guess what? Miami didn't stop the Joker. Dream just shared it with us, right? The problem for Denver is, and the problem for all of us trying to anticipate and forecast how the series is going to go, is what version of defense will Denver show up with? Now, Denver was a top five defense. They had a top five defensive rating from January the 1st through these playoffs. They hadn't lost at home since March the 30th. They showed an intensity and a kind of attention to detail throughout these playoffs that made us, you know, believe what we were seeing. And they for sure were doing it on the defensive end. So the lapses, the defensive lapses, and for sure, a million times over, Miami deserves credit for the incredible tenacity. Those guys have guts made out of balls. They have balls made out of guts. It's an incredible, incredible intestinal fortitude that starts with a coach and every other single guy believes. And they're constantly playing with house money. But that doesn't translate into wins. What translates into wins is knocking down open threes. And they've had open threes in game one that they missed, and they had open threes in game two that they made. So they won game two because they made them. To Dream's point, they were down 8 points at the start of the fourth quarter. They had an 8-point deficit in the fourth quarter and then outscored Denver in an embarrassing fashion. That is attention to detail. That is focus, that is energy, that is effort. And we're going to see, coming into the series, we said maybe it's the case finally that Spoelstra is up against a coach who has the ability to kind of match him in terms of wits and motivation. In our own East Coast Bias text thread, the Dream has shared with us, we are finally seeing some adversity out of Denver. Denver's confronted with the first adversity, really, you know, now they kind of slept walk a little bit through the last month of the regular season, but that wasn't real adversity. They've been dominant through these playoffs because the true identity of the team, their superior talent, their cohesion has shown through. But that ain't what we got in game two. So here we are set up for the rest of the series asking which defensive version of the Denver Nuggets will show up each night. And I don't have an answer. So we're going to have fun handicapping this one, boys.
One thing, Raheem. Mike Malone, Eric Spoelstra. And I've always been a Mike Malone fan. I've always felt like he's done a pretty good job with his team. But Eric Spoelstra, to me, is the best coach in the NBA right now with what he's able to do. I thought his decision to insert Kevin Love back into the starting lineup, I know it doesn't sound like much, I thought it was a monstrous deal in this game because he gave them size. He got them some open looks. He was able to get on the glass and get some rebounds and get them out in the transition. I thought that was one of the more under-the-radar, underrated type of moves of game two that in many ways kind of spearheaded that start for the Heat, aside from Strus hitting a gazillion threes. Are you concerned about Spoelstra's brilliance possibly taking over this series, or are you not going to read too much into that? Because listen, we've seen Eric Spoelstra put on some coaching clinics in this postseason, out-coaching Budenholzer, out-coaching Thibodeau, running circles around Joe Mazzulla. Is that a narrative you would be worried about if you're a Denver backer? Because I like Mike Malone. I have no problem with Mike Malone. But Spoelstra, he's got something cooking right now, dude.
Yes, that is a concern for me. And the big reason why is because I think Mike Malone has a decision to make with Michael Porter Jr. You look at Michael Porter Jr. He's 3-for-17 from behind the arc in this series thus far. Only two guys who have been on his level. I mean, J.R. Smith, 4-for-22. Steph Curry, 4-for-21 in the 2015 finals. So I think if Michael Porter Jr. continues to shoot poorly from three and he doesn't have the focus defensively and he continues to jack. I mean, everybody saw the image that Harala Bob Bulgaris posted with Michael Porter Jr. shooting over three guys while Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic were wide open under the basket. He's going to have a decision to make on him. And do we know if Jeff Green and Bruce Brown can pick up the slack? So I think that's a decision that he's going to have to make. He's going to have to figure some things out. And I just think Spoelstra, he's had an answer for everything. This zone that he's throwing out, it causes them problems at inopportune times. So I think that is a real concern.
Yeah, I would say, again, like on the offensive front, I'm not concerned about Denver, really. Like, they can withstand Michael Porter Jr. shooting poorly. They don't have a problem scoring with Miami. The problem they have is getting opportune stops. They got zero stops in the fourth quarter of game two of the finals because Michael Porter Jr. let his offensive performance infect his defensive effort. And for whatever reason, it was contagious because KCP sucked. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had two fouls on three-point plays that were completely unnecessary. It is as though the Denver team is learning how to contest out on the perimeter for the first time. And this is the Miami voodoo that I just can't figure out and get my head around, honestly. But, you know, the single biggest challenge to me in front of Malone is keeping Michael Porter Jr.'s head in the game, right? And this, to his credit, to Malone's credit, they did this very effectively with Aaron Gordon. He recognized in the series against the Lakers that Aaron Gordon was in absentia. He was absent in the first three games. They figured out in game one of the NBA Finals to get Aaron Gordon touches at the very beginning of the game. He got very comfortable. It led to him playing aggressively. Spoelstra countered because Spoelstra got that brain in his head. He's a big brain boy with Kevin Love. It took Aaron Gordon, nullified and neutralized the Aaron Gordon thing. I love this chess match. It's wonderful. But the thing, Mike Malone can't make Michael Porter Jr. play better. All he can do is try and put him in the best position and make him believe that he's capable of more, and he has to try and trick him into playing defense. That, to me, is a much harder challenge than some X's and O's stuff, JJ.
No doubt about it. All right, boys, when we come back, we'll set the stage for Game 3 down in South Florida, and the series price has been updated. You're not getting the same number with the Miami Heat, but is there still value in taking the Miami Heat to maybe go and shock the world and win this year's NBA title? We'll get to that, all that more. East Coast Bias Boys coming right back. It's the Ringer Gambling Show, presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
So we have a line for Game 3. We also have an updated series price. And to me, Raheem, with the way this line has moved down, and it's still a little higher than I thought it would be. I mean, Miami's got home court advantage. Miami's 1-1 coming home. And yet the Denver Nuggets are anywhere from 250 to 270 to go and win the series. My thing is, if you miss the boat on the Heat after Game 1, tough pill to swallow, right, dude? Getting in on Game 3, not getting... I mean, you could have gotten plus 500, plus 600, plus 650. Now seeing, you know, plus 2 and change, Raheem, not as juicy.
Yeah, not as juicy at all. I mean, this denotes that the Nuggets have like a 72% chance at winning this series. I'm not necessarily buying that at this point, but I mean, based on the original line, it makes sense. I'm personally going to stay away just because I do have a healthy fear and respect for the Miami Heat. And like I said before, I'm probably going to be buying out of the Denver Nuggets series spread. I just don't like the way this series is going just because what we saw in Game 2, it was, I mean, people are going to call it an outlier. But at this point, I mean, the definition of insanity is just assuming that the same thing is going to happen over and over again. And it's just like you're not going to do anything different. I mean, you look at the fact that the Miami Heat have won 7 games this postseason outright as 7.5-point underdogs. I mean, this is a team that, I mean, they shot 48% from 3 in Game 2, and this is the 6th time they've done that. So I just don't want anything to do with this, the size on this series. So I'm staying away.
Yeah, JJ, I have a confession. We were together after Game 1. We talked it through. We tried to do some prognosticating for Game 2. We did give out to everybody a juicy fat over the total winner. And when we gave that out, when the show went up on Friday, that number was still around 214. It jumped all the way up to 216.5. So please, my dear friends, I hope that you are consuming the East Coast Bias Boys in real time and catching the best number that's out there. But I am going to confess, I bought the Miami series price after Game 1.
And, you couldn't pass up the number. You must have had too much liability with the Nuggets.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it wasn't a big investment. It was enough to cover. It was a reasonable hedge. And the reason, and I'm knocking on wood, because I don't want the thing to happen that I'm going to say is the thing why I bought it. If Jokic gets hurt, I think Denver's cooked. So I just did. I just wanted to have that exposure somewhat mitigated, and that I didn't think that I was going to get a better price on Miami than that Game 1 price. Now, if Miami had lost Game 2 in any fashion, the price would have been better. But I just I was worried about you know, what we've seen out of Miami, enough to have a tiny slice after game one.
I have a question for you guys. And sure. The question I have is...
I love questions.
How much do you think finals experience is impacting this series and is going to impact the series going forward? Because, you know, I was doing some digging and you guys saw the text thread. There's been very few teams who have won their first championship without going down in any series. And this Miami Heat team, they have guys who have been to the finals. Obviously, Kyle Lowry, Kevin Love, they're NBA champions. Jimmy Butler has been there before. The Nuggets only have KCP, who's been to the finals and won. So how much is that a concern for you guys?
For me, I'll start with this one. Not a ton. Not a ton. Because I think if you are wired the right way, Raheem, and your team has the right infrastructure and you have the right DNA, you can overcome that. I think, though, the test is, okay, when you get kicked in the gut and you're facing serious adversity, how do you handle it? And, you know, House, I don't even think this would be serious adversity if they go and win game three, because then they're still in the driver's seat. I want to see how Denver responds if they're down in this series. So let's say they go and lose game three in Miami. Then all of a sudden, everybody's like, wow, did you yuck up this series in game two? Are you overrated? Do you not know how to win? Is Miami a team of destiny? Like, all of those storylines that come in, that to me, more than anything, is where I'm going to learn, okay, do the Nuggets in 2022, 2023 have it? Are they wired the right way? Or are they not? That's when I'll learn.
JJ, it's a great point, and I totally agree with you. I almost kind of wish Miami wins so we get those storylines, because it'll be so juicy, and I would love to see Denver with that adversity. But honestly, I only wish for that hypothetically, because I have too much exposure to Denver. I don't really want to lose my bets. I don't want to be at risk of it. But I will say this. I like you. I'm not really that worried about Denver, its ability to maintain composure, because I believe that the Joker sets the tone for that team, and he is a non-plus fella. You cannot shake the Joker. And even in games when he gets a little, sometimes you see him a little aggressive. Sometimes you see him, you know, go out and get a foul once in a while. He keeps it inside the lines. You know what I mean? So I'm not worried about the Joker. The wild card to me is the role players. And it, you know, to date, we haven't really seen anything that's derailed Denver, but this Michael Porter Jr. thing is a real deal situation. They have to get through to him and make him feel great and have him feel like he's contributing to the team, even if he's not making a shot, because we can't have him forcing shots, and we cannot abide any further defensive mishaps like we had in game two.
One thing I want to throw at you, House, because I know you still like Denver to win this series. And full disclosure, guys, I still think Denver, when it's all said and done, is going to win this series. My thought all along has been it's not going to be easy for them. Miami is going to push them to the death, and I think we're headed in that direction. But House, for the first time now, you can get the Nuggets at -1.5 games for plus money. Now, I'm going to exclude your kind of situation here, because I know you're tied in a variety of different ways. But for somebody who has not jumped in at all in the NBA Finals, they haven't made a series bet, they don't have a future either way, -1.5 games of plus money at 1-1, House. You think that's a good wager if you're jumping in right now?
Well, I personally feel comfortable enough with it, but the problem that I have is I heard Dream at the top of this show express his own skepticism around it. And I trust Dream, because Dream, you know, is running math models that reflect, you know, aspects of this matchup that, you know, aren't there for the common viewer to just be taking in. I still think that there is a very plausible case to be made for Denver to win this series 4-2. And I'm not that afraid of it. And I like the idea of plus money. I wouldn't take a huge, you know, run at it, but I think plus money on you know, Denver winning this series 4-2 is still a viable bet. I mean, this, you know, none of the things that we talked about coming into this, or that we saw in game one, have abandoned the team. They haven't experienced any kind of injury. they have, you know, some adversity for the first time, and let's see how they deal with it.
All right, boys, when we come back, we'll set the stage for game three. The line is out. Mm. It's a juicy number. I think it's the most fascinating game, hands down, in this series, and there's a certain lean that I have that might be carrying over to a theme that we hit on come, what, Friday, meaning Sunday's game. I'm getting all these dates messed up, but we'll have a preview for game three, ATS, total, all that good stuff. It's coming up next. So we have a line, of course, for game three of the NBA Finals in Miami Wednesday night, and it's moved a little bit. The Denver Nuggets on FanDuel are laying 2.5 points against the Miami Heat. Denver on the money line is at minus 142. The Miami Heat on the money line are at plus 120. Total right now in this game is 214.5. So we'll see if Raheem has another winner for us with the total. We all hopped on board with that. The over was a cash cow in game two. But from a side perspective, Raheem, I'm going back to the well here, dude. And I'm not, I don't need the 2.5 points. I don't want the 2.5 points. I'm taking Miami on the money line here. I think Miami will be ready to go. I think for the first time in this postseason, we are going to see the Denver Nuggets have to deal with that sort of adversity that it seems like every NBA champion has to contend with at some point in time. It's coming for them because I think Miami has obviously found something from three. I think there's more adjustments that still need to be made from a Denver perspective. I'm taking the Heat, who have been money in these first games at home in particular playoff series. One game three against the Milwaukee Bucks. One game three against the New York Knicks. One game three against the Boston Celtics. I think they make it 4-for-4. And I do believe it's one of those games where I don't need the 2.5 points. Because I think if the game's tight, Miami's winning the game. I think if Denver wins the game, they win and they win comfortably. So Miami, money line. That's my play for game three.
I actually agree with you here. My model makes this game a pick 'em. Like I said before, my game's in Miami, I make it a pick 'em. My game's in Denver, I make it Denver -5. So I think you're getting a positive expected value wager. Obviously, this line open, Nuggets -1.5. It's been steamed up to -2.5. I think if you play the money line, you really have a good wager. So you're getting plus money on a team who probably should win 50% of the time, according to my model. So I do like that. When it comes to the total, I said the other day, this game was 86 possessions. You had 86 possessions in game two, 91 possessions in game one. So this is a really slow paced series. So you saw this total come down from 216.5 to 214.5. And if Miami doesn't put up an offensive rating of 180 in that fourth quarter, then you might have saw an under game in game two. So I do lean towards the under here. But one thing I will say is that when you look at how these teams have performed in the first half of games, the first half under is now 2-0 in the NBA Finals and 11-3 over the last 3 years in the NBA Finals. Shout out to Evan Abrahams. He works over at the Action Network. He compiled that. I mean, the first half under in NBA Finals since 2005, 58-43-4. That's 57%, and 10-3 the last 3 years. So you see these teams start to get off to a slow start. I think I like the first half under. It's 110 right now.
That's wonderful. I am joining Dream on the first half under. I really like that. The only cash that I had from game two, because I played Denver to win and parlayed that with some player performances, was Denver -4 in the first half of game two. They showed out properly. I don't want to side in the half of game three. I don't want to mess with that. My lean would be Miami to win the first half. But honestly, I'll live with the consequences. I'm on the other side of you guys. I like Denver on the money line in this game, and it's one of the cheapest money lines I think you're going to catch Denver at. And I'm just going to parlay it with player performance. The player performance will not include Michael Porter Jr. Lost all of those bets in game two. It's just going to be right down the middle, Joker and Jamal Murray player props paired up with Denver to win outright, because those all end up being plus money parlays. Not a huge investment by house in game three. I just want to sit back and really enjoy it because the storylines have gotten fantastic. But I am prepared to treat game two as an aberration because it was so out of character for Denver. Not out of character for Miami. I trust Miami, but out of character for Denver. So I think ultimately, because my view is that Denver is deeper and able to meet Miami in a whole variety of different ways and win games a whole variety of different ways, I'm riding with Denver. Not a huge investment, but I'm on the other side of you fellas.
So we have a little heads up action. I like it. I like it.
The one thing I would like to say is that I think this series is going back to Denver tied 2-2. So I think you can zigzag this. Whoever wins game 3, I think you can fade them in game 4. So that's how I'm approaching this. I don't know how you guys are approaching this, but I think the series is going back to Denver tied 2-2. So zigzag.
I agree with that. My hope is, though, Raheem, that I'm on the right side of the zig and the zag. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't want to just hit the zag or the zig. I want to hit both of them. And I am with you. Lengthy series on our hands. I think Denver will be able to break through on Miami's home floor. But I really am hoping that we see this Denver team in a position where they're getting nudged a little bit, where they are getting their backs pushed up against that wall. I think that, to me, is what you want to see for a team that's trying to break through and win an NBA championship for the first time. House, I'm glad that you mentioned Michael Porter Jr., because we were not going to allow you to get involved with any of his props after what we did in game 1 and after what we did in game 2. But curiously, outside of the big 2, obviously you have Jokic, obviously you have Murray, and I'll give you the Miami guys as well. Is there anybody that we're looking to kind of pinpoint from a prop standpoint that maybe we could take advantage of? Is it Brown? Is it Aaron Gordon? The Heat guys are so tricky, dude. I mean, the Heat guys, you know what sums them up in a nutshell? Strus. Game 1, same shots, didn't hit them. Game 2, hit everything. So if you bet him in game 2, you made a lot of money. If you bet his overs in game 1, you donated. So those Heat guys are always very, very tricky from that standpoint.
The guy that's been a reasonable return on investment is Jimmy Butler points unders. He hasn't been scored. I played Jimmy Butler points under again in game 2. I think the number was like 25.5 or 26. He's not out there scoring. He's a catalyst, but we haven't seen him go off since the 47-point game in, what was it, against Milwaukee in whatever that was, the first couple games of that series. And I do think that there is a lingering impact to his ankle, but he's still the maestro. He's still running the show out there. He's still drawing double teams every single time he gets down to the baseline. He can penetrate, down to the baseline. The double comes, and then he makes the correct pass. So quietly, I think going under on Jimmy Butler points total is still a plausible play.
Raheem, we like somebody from a pop standpoint?
It's so crazy, but I think you can go back to the window with Michael Porter Jr. And
oh, boy.
Hear me out.
Because now we're getting an undervalue. We're getting a little bit more value on these numbers. I can understand that. But what's the argument?
So check this out. I'm not going to go over on his points. I'm not going to go over on his 3-point shooting. Where you go over is on his rebounding prop. His rebounding prop is over 7.5 rebounds plus 114. This is a guy who had 13 rebounds in game 1. And let me remind you, all of these guys are little. Gabe Vincent, Kyle Lowry, Caleb Martin. They're all little guys. Michael Porter Jr. is 6'10". And he got 6 rebounds in game 2, and he only played 26 minutes. So if you look over his last 10 games or so, I mean, he had 13 rebounds. He had 10 rebounds, 10 rebounds, 7 rebounds, 10 rebounds. I mean, he's going to be a rebounding machine if he's out there. Now, if he only plays 26 minutes, I think you're in a tough spot. But if he plays his full allotment of minutes, he's going to go over this rebounding prop with ease, and you're getting plus money on it. So I think that's the direction I would lean. And then to come back to House's point about Jimmy Butler not scoring much, he's become more of a facilitator. Now, obviously, I lean towards the under, but they are at home, and Heat role players could shoot better. His assist prop is 6.5. You're looking at a guy who had 9 assists in game 2. So I think that assist prop is a little bit short. It's only juiced at minus 120, so I kind of like that one.
Raheem, I got to give you a lot of praise here, buddy, because you were all over regression to the mean for Caleb Martin. Caleb Martin, who played out of his mind against the Knickerbockers and played even better against the Boston Celtics. So far in this series, his presence has not been felt. So good read in the first two games. But do you look at game three? Back at home, maybe it's a different role player stepping up for the Heat. Is there potential buy low value with Caleb Martin after his two stinkers in Denver?
I'm still a little scared of it. And a big reason why is obviously you mentioned it earlier. They put Kevin Love into the starting lineup. So Kevin Love is going to be playing more minutes. So I still want to go under on it. I mean, I think, you know, Caleb Martin, he had an out of body experience in that series against the Boston Celtics. And I said, I think that says a lot more about the Boston defense. I mean, obviously, we spoke at length about the Nuggets defense, but I still think that they're better than, you know, what the Celtics were doing. So I'm still going to stay away from this.
House, I feel like, though, we got to pinpoint a Heat player that's going to go off. It's just it's literally like playing darts, though, with those guys, because is it going to be Strus? Is it going to be Vincent? Is it going to be Caleb Martin? Like, it's always very tough outside of Butler and Bam, who, let's give Bam credit, he's played really, really good basketball in the first two games of this series. But you know one of those wing guys is going to be a good bet to go and bang three threes. It's just a matter of figuring out who.
Yeah, Gabe Vincent sitting there staring us right in the face at minus 128 to go over 13.5 points. Man, that is a very square bet. Those are the kind of bets that I love, obviously, goes without saying. I do think, you know, there could be something with Caleb Martin, you know, the rest of the role guys sucking up a lot of that oxygen from him. So I my inclination would be to pinpoint Vincent. I loved how comfortable he looked in game two. I loved, you know, who was it that went flying by and he gave him that beautiful, you know, was it Christian Brown who went zooming by him?
Yes.
Yeah. It was absolutely wonderful. Gabe Vincent would be my selection for the Heat guy that I might, you know, select to be on the proper side of additional Jimmy Butler rewards and favors.
You know, I might play that.
I would go with Gabe Vincent too.
I mean, Raheem, how about this? Heat to win. Give me Gabe Vincent, 2 to 3+ made. Let's do 3+ made threes, and let's do Butler over 6.5 assists. How do you like that, FanDuel? I'm playing that on Wednesday night.
That's a big like number. That. You're going to get a big number there, JJ.
Let's see how big
I like
a number.
That. I'm going to be honest with you. I would totally add Michael Porter Jr. over 7.5 rebounds at +114.
Now you guys are really getting
me in
trouble.
I think you're getting a bargain there.
You know, JJ, the point that Dream makes is absolutely right when it comes to MPJ. The Nuggets cannot afford to not play him. Like, Mike Malone clearly saw something in game two. In fact, I think I texted you guys. I can't remember who it is that I texted when we were like, you know, halfway into the third quarter and his minutes were way down and he was not on the floor. I asked, did he get injured at some point that I didn't see? He clearly was in Malone's doghouse for some reason, but he is so important to the ultimate success of Denver. They can't afford to manage minutes with MPJ. So I like glass half full Dream saying, look, if Denver's going to compete, then MPJ's got to get the minutes that he's been accustomed to getting. And if he gets those minutes, he gets the rebounds. That's the thesis. And that's one that I could definitely subscribe to.
Boys, I'm looking right now. Heat to win. Vincent 3+ made threes. Jimmy Butler 6+ assists. +418. Not as juicy as I thought it would be. Still like it, but not as juicy, Raheem, as I thought it would be. I may have to add your Michael Porter Jr. prop in there to really make it juicy, to really make it worth my while.
I mean, see what happens. You got to have some fun with it.
Listen, that's what we want to do. Game three of the NBA Finals. We're going to hold nothing back. Speaking of holding nothing back, how about what transpired today in the world of golf? I mean, we have Mr. Fairway rolling with us, and I think it's fair to say that Tuesday gave you a stunner with the PGA and LIV coming together? Who had that on their bingo card? We'll discuss coming up next. So I couldn't believe, House. I wake up this morning, I go for my coffee run, and my usual tradition, of course, is to scroll through the nonsense that is Twitter and figure out, all right, what are we doing on this particular day? Now with Twitter being the way that it is, I see the PGA Live tweet from CNBC, and CNBC, obviously a reputable source, a legitimate source, but I'm like, I don't know. This seems fake. This does not seem real. I do a little digging. I do a little research. And sure enough, after 2 years, all this bickering, all this back and forth, after the PGA is accusing all these guys of taking the blood money from Liv, Liv going out on their own and nobody watching their events, Koepka coming back and winning. Are they going to be able to play in the majors? Are they going to be able to play in the Ryder Cup? Well, after 2 years, House, the PGA and Liv, they are coming together. Golf back under one roof. And I guess a whole lot to do about nothing when it's all said and done. But man, if I'm those PGA guys that didn't take that blood money, I'm not sitting too good. I'm not feeling too good here on this Wednesday, bro. Just saying.
Well, JJ, as we do here at The Ringer and on FanDuel TV, we just process the world as it comes to us in real time. So this story is all of about 2 hours old as we tape this at our usual juncture. So I'm still processing and filtering. It is a stone cold stunner in terms of the timing. But I will say it's not that big of a surprise in terms of the ultimate outcome here. There has been some indication, and you know, we were lucky enough to go down to the Masters. The Masters is kind of the golf industry's Super Bowl. Everybody in the whole industry is together there. It is like the kickoff to major season. So it's a great time to see everybody in the entire golf industry. And the live topic was a topic of conversation, and one person who's in a position to be very much in the know forecasted and kind of walked us through a potential combination where Liv and the PGA Tour could live harmoniously under the same roof, with Liv, especially the Saudi group, especially bolstering the fall schedule, because the PGA Tour has had over the last half decade, maybe longer, a real challenge with its fall schedule. That is, events that come after the Tour Championship and precede the end of the calendar year. They've had a hard time maintaining sponsors, maintaining interest. It's up against football. It's up against college football and pro football that season. So additional investment from an outside entity with an interest in, you know, participating in professional golf, very desirable to the PGA Tour. So there is a natural kind of combination that makes sense there between the tour and the Saudi investment fund, and they can, you know, really do something creative with those fall events potentially. But I did not expect we're a week out from the U.S. Open. I did not expect this to be the thing that we're going to talk about. It's amazing that we're all going to be together at the U.S. Open, and we're going to get to process this. Again, the golf industry all together, tons of details yet to be decided. But the merger from a business perspective makes the most sense, because it means that the best golfers will be playing golf at the same time more often. And that's what the TV contracts with the PGA Tour require. So that works out great for the tour, and honestly, great for the Saudi investment fund.
Yeah, listen, it's a good thing to me if you're a golf fan, because now when you hit February, you don't have to worry about where Koepka is going to be or where Cameron Smith is going to be. These guys are going to be back competing against one another. More often than not, you're going to have the best players in the world playing alongside one another. I just know that a lot of those live guys, they're going to be walking back to the PGA Tour house with a little extra pep in their step, because their wallets are a lot fatter. They still got to play in the majors. And now they come back to the tour with all this loot in their hands. And for guys like Rory and Colin Morikawa and a lot of the guys who kind of did the PR work of the PGA Tour over these last couple of years, I know they're not feeling too good. I wouldn't be.
Well, JJ, I think there's a make-whole. There is a lot of discussion in the press release about the significant investment by the Saudi investment fund. I think part of the allocation of funds that arrive as the merger occurs, some of that is going to find its way into the pockets of some of these tour players, PGA Tour players, who carried enormous water for the tour in dealing with this disruptive disruptor in the LIV Tour. I think there's good. There's a little bit of cash coming.
There will be some compensation. And know this, next week at LA Country Club, this is the buzz. This will be the chatter. And we'll have a lot of picks coming up next week for the U.S. Open. House will be out in Los Angeles. Father's Day weekend. Primetime golf. Hopefully I can nail another winner like we did with Brooks Koepka in the PGA. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. Raheem has been in the lab and he's been texting me. JJ, you got to get back invested with your boy. What does he mean by that? We'll wrap it up. East Coast Bias. We'll come right back. Okay, before we say goodbye, I didn't think it'd be possible after what Aaron Judge did a year ago that there would be value in Aaron Judge repeating as American League Most Valuable Player, Raheem. And I think the three of us all know the nerds of baseball have a love affair with Shohei Ohtani. Listen, he's an amazing talent. He's a unicorn. He's a freak. He's doing something that we've never seen before in our lifetimes. However, his team stinks. They are not any good. So if the Angels are 75-86, I don't want to hear about Shohei Ohtani winning the MVP award, because then basically abolish the MVP and give Shohei Ohtani the MVP every single year he's playing in Major League Baseball and there's nothing to discuss. Anyway, Raheem, Aaron Judge, who has come back off an injury, has played out of his mind for the New York Yankees, crashing in the walls in Dodger Stadium, hitting home runs on the same sort of pace he was at a year ago when it comes to Roger Maris's home run record. You want to share with the FanDuel TV audience and with the Ringer Gambling Show audience what the number is at the moment for Aaron Judge to win AL MVP?
You got Aaron Judge at plus 550 to win the American League MVP, which I think is an egregious number when you consider what he's doing. I mean, you're looking at a guy who was basically the Yankee offense. And obviously, you know, Stanton was out some time. You know, Rizzo's been banged up. I just think this number is way too high. And if you ask me, if Judge is healthy and doesn't go on the IL, I like that number.
Plus 550. Can I entice you, Joe House?
Yeah, I'm just sitting and listening and taking it all in, because the baseball team that plays here in Washington, more competitive than people anticipated this season, but still, it's a quadruple A team. Nobody really pretends that you know, they're competing. So I'm not really super invested in baseball yet, but I do like the sound of a value, and I do know who Aaron Judge is, and I do know what he's capable of. If the Yankees get on a little bit of a hot streak and reel off, you know, a nice month of June here coming up, that number is going to go through the floor. So grab it now. Grab it before, you know, Miami get the Yankees get things correct. I got Miami on the brain. Let's get a little action before the Yankees get it going, JJ.
I like it. Raheem, give me some other numbers, because I want to fade Ohtani for MVP. And it's not, and I don't want to sound like I'm a Shohei Ohtani hater. I just don't think his team is any good. And I know come August and September, if we're having these conversations, I'm going to be the guy banging the drum for somebody in contention to go and win the award. So Judge is the number two choice. We'll see if he can avoid injury and whatnot. What other numbers? Give me a couple other numbers for the top guys for AL MVP, because I'm going to give you a choice that I might want to also get invested in.
I think you can go with Alvarez. He's at plus 2,000. But I mean,
that.
I guess, yeah, I mean, obviously, the way the Texas Rangers are playing right now, I mean, Marcus Semien at plus 3,000 might be, you know, he might have some value. But I mean, I don't know if he's going to necessarily have the numbers that those other guys are going to have. But I mean, the Texas Rangers, it's every single night. I mean, they have one of the best offenses in the league. So, you know, maybe they might want to reward someone from his team. But I do like Alvarez at plus 20-1. Franco at 31 might also be a good number.
The only thing that you're worried about with some of these numbers for the guys who don't play defense, they hold that against you. And that's one thing you know about Aaron Judge. He's going to bring it from a defensive standpoint across the board. That does it for the East Coast Bias. Boys, for House, Raheem, JJ signing off. Good job by the War Gone Warrior. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Be good, everybody.